All right, Anna, thank you for joining us from Moscow, Russia. How are you?
Daniel, thank you very much for inviting me and for me being here. I'm really grateful for this opportunity, and I hope that we can have more interactions in the future, in the nearest future.
Yes, me too.
I'm good. I'm good.
Good.
What's new?
I'm doing good, doing good. Yeah, when I published an interview with Nancy McWilliams when I first started podcasting, and Anna reached out to me shortly afterwards. And so we started emailing back and forth, and she published that video with Russian subtitles for her colleagues. And so, can you talk to us a little bit about why that video and supervision, what you're interested in? Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure, gladly, if it's interesting for people. I'm a therapist. I've been a therapist since 2018, and I started studying for supervision, and I have recently I've become a supervisor 2 years ago. And Nancy McWilliams is highly appreciated in Russia. Her point of view on supervision is especially appreciated in our community. I'm part of the Russian Psychotherapeutic League, the PPL, which is the largest Russian professional organization, and we are part of the EAP, European Association of Psychotherapists, the largest European professional organization, and also the Asian Federation of Psychotherapists. And I'm not only the member of this league, but also in the Committee on Supervision. I'm the curator and the person who advises on some development. I'm in
Wow.
charge of social media and some other, let's say, PR and small marketing tasks that we have in our professional organization. And there are lots of teaching programs on supervision in our committee. And one of the main branch, let's put it like this, is the deeper psychology, the supervision from the point of view of deeper psychological approaches, like psychoanalysis, Jungian analysis, and Erik Erikson and TFP, etc. That is why Nancy McWilliams is very much appreciated, especially in our context. So when I wanted to do something, our social media is in the Committee of Supervision is quite professional, but I tried to find something very special, something unique. So when I found your video and your YouTube channel, I thought that wow, this is a fantastic opportunity because I've bought from Amazon your latest book, The Psychoanalytic Supervision, and translated the first chapter, like not officially, just in accordance with the law, like we are allowed less than 10%, right? Just to give some idea on this upcoming book. And I thought that wow, that would be very interesting. But the Russian auto subtitles were so bad. I mean, not maybe so bad, but there were mistakes, like not nice mistakes.
Oh,
To email you and ask your permission to
no.
edit them. And you were so helpful and so collaborative that at the end of the day, now this video is actually distributed not only through our social medias, through our social media, but also the publisher's social media.
Wow.
The publisher from St. Petersburg, who were translating Nancy McWilliams' latest book, The Psychoanalytic supervision. This lady, the representative of this publisher, is actually our subscriber and the friend of our head of the supervision committee, Inga Viktorovna Rumantseva. Her name is Tamara, and she I think that she forwarded and distributed your video through them as well. So, oh, wow. And you know who translated Nancy's book? One of our teachers who teaches supervision within our supervision committee, Vladimir Snegur. So this is a very wow. tight group.
Very tight group, yeah. Wow. I'm surprised by a lot of that. I'm surprised that you guys are interested in like the deeper approaches like psychoanalysis, and you said even like Jungian. So I want to kind of get into that a little bit. What is it that, before we get there, what is it that stands out about Nancy McWilliams' approach to supervision? What is it that's different than what you might learn or normally hear about?
It coincides with the approach that is Inga Viktorovna Rumantseva and Denis Alexandrovich Fedoryaka. This is they are the authors of one approach to supervision, which is called in English. It will be intermodality approach, or so it's like in between approaches. So this method of supervision is applied to any case, not depending on the approach in which the therapist works with the client.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this is this approach is supported by the president of the Russian Psychotherapy League, Viktor Viktorovich Makarov. He finds this approach as very fresh and workable, let's put it like this, because this approach suggests that a supervisor and a supervisee, they work like partners. It's not like hierarchical structure. No, they work like partners. And what Dr. McWilliams suggests is that we as supervisors should learn from our supervisee as well, and we should think about his or her world and structure, psychostructure, and et cetera, et cetera. For instance, how she discusses when the supervisor is in artistic modality, is more like narcissistic, and his supervisee, a female, hysterical girl, colleague. Yeah. So this kind of stuff, and this is very, very. This is what we find very useful to everyday supervision, because it does not, it's not like law enforcement style supervision. It's development supervision, and it's like when a supervisee and a supervisor meet, they make the whole third world. And it's so beautiful, and this is
that's a beautiful way of putting it. That's what I don't know if you've read her. She has a book called Psychoanalytic Diagnosis.
Yes, of course.
You have it. That's when I was first introduced to personality styles and how the therapist's personality style and the client's personality style, that's going to impact the interaction, and you should pay attention to that, and so you know how to best help your client. And nobody in my school talks about that. it's, you know, here's like you learn CBT or another approach, and it really doesn't matter what personality style you or your client has. And so I read that book and I was like, whoa, what a beautiful lens, a tool. And then, yeah, the psychoanalytic supervision, just like you, yeah, it's like, what a important way to understand your supervisee and yourself.
Yeah. True, yes.
What is it that got you interested in supervision, in learning more about it?
2 years ago, when I firstly met my mentor and my supervisor, Ingur Mantzler, which is also the head of the supervision committee in the PPL, she helped me a lot with my clients, with my narcissistic...
You're good.
Narcissistic clients. And after some time, after a few weeks of regular work, she suggested I become a supervisor. And I thought that she was crazy. I still am young. And I thought that I did not have enough knowledge and experience to become a supervisor. But she explained to me that I could learn. And she saw something, the way I think, analytical way of thinking, let's put it like this. She found that it's very good for a supervisor. So she actually kind of pushed me into this sphere. Uh-huh. And after some time, I decided, all right, I did not intend to work as a supervisor, but I decided just to learn, to enrich myself and my work with clients. And also I heard from her that I could do business supervision. And that is very interesting for me because from the beginning of my work, people, clients who come to me, the most widespread request to work with me is to help them with some business issues, with their goals in business and finances, and or some crisis, like crisis situations. And I know that businessmen, I've noticed for these years, during these years, I've noticed that a businessman, they do not tend to talk about their past, their childhood experience. They understand more and welcome more talking about activities, or behavior, not about emotions or their past. They prefer to talk about its future and nowadays
very,
situations.
Very like present. Goal-directed.
Right, yes. Yeah. And supervision is the way how I can work better for them. So supervision is a set of skills which demands from me so much knowledge, and I do not know, I don't even know if I ever learn all these piles of books and everything, but I'm really doing my best. I'm really trying to. Now, after 2 years, I see that I can do something.
Good.
And when I use supervision skills for them, and they don't need to know this, right? What I'm using, therapeutic approach or supervision approach, it doesn't matter because they have their requests. But I don't talk about past to understand their reality. I rather talk about nowadays, about present. And I do a lot of thinking and I do a lot of analyzing in order to understand everything. Their psychological defenses, their development, their personal style, everything. And then I I make something about it, and I provide something what Nancy McWilliams would call psychodynamic hypothesis, but for their business. I mean, for them as a personality, which will be applicable to their business and their goal. And we call it business supervision. Another way to call it is like psychoanalytical coaching, which is also widespread in the USA and Europe and also Russia nowadays. And this is what makes me totally fascinated about supervision, because you don't have to ask about past, but still you can understand the person and help.
That's so cool. I have very little experience or exposure to supervision or coaching or consultation. So it's really cool to hear, because I'm very interested in psychoanalysis. So it's really cool to hear your experience of applying that to coaching and supervision. Yeah, that's really neat.
And of course, only psychoanalytical, a deeper, deeper psychological approaches are applicable in this kind of supervision, because otherwise we cannot understand a person in the way how I described it. Only Freud, Jung, Melanie Klein, Erik Erikson, these our fathers and mothers.
You
one story, Wilfred Bion as well.
Especially
for analyzing groups, but this is very helpful.
Is psychoanalysis and our fathers and mothers, are they popular in Russia? Or maybe that's too broad to say, but in your circle, I know they're popular in your circle. I don't know. For people who want to study psychology in Russia or in Moscow, is it a popular theory?
Yes, psychoanalysis is quite popular. If we compare CBT with psychoanalysis, then psychoanalysis loses. Because a modern person would like to solve his or her issue fast, immediately, as soon as possible, yesterday. And of course, CBT approaches are more understandable for people. They are less scary because they don't need to accept that, wow, there is a huge part of me which is unconscious and I have no power over it. Because this is the most scary part. They can access, they understand their activity, their behavior, and they will understand their emotions and feelings. That's why, of course, psychoanalysis will lose and is losing to CBT. But no, there are still people who are very interested in psychoanalysis in both ways, to study it and to be clients in patients in psychoanalysis. There are professional organizations which are still part of the international IPE, right? International Psychoanalysis, IPA, right? Organizations. Cool, yeah. And so they are interchanging experiences and knowledge and support each other, as far as I know. There are special institutions, private institutions who study, who provide education in psychoanalysis, and there are governmental programs for psychoanalysis. And the main institutions in Russia, they provide this kind of education. For instance, master's program in psychoanalysis, unique, a totally unique and fantastic program, are provided by two huge governmental universities, which are worldly accepted and admitted as one of, I think, 100, top 100 universities of the world, or one of top universities in the world. It's the MSU, Moscow State University. And the HSE, the highest school of economy. They also have a huge faculty of psychology, and they provide teaching for on psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic coaching, by the way. There are so many interesting programs that they provide, like cosmic psychology or conflict psychology. It's fantastic. It's so interesting.
Wow. That sounds awesome. It sounds very popular and a wide variety.
Yeah.
Why did you go down the path of psychoanalysis versus the path of CBT?
Good question. I'm so sorry, colleagues, but I found that CBT doesn't work for me. I will explain it. I also have one of the approaches that I'm specialized in is DBT by Marsha Linehan. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is part of CBT. It really helps me a lot, because it's so easy to explain people, especially who come with short-term therapy, how to change their emotional reactions, why they do need emotions, why they do need fear. Marsha Linehan, I'm really fond of her. I was very honored and lucky to be one of the students in her DBT skills course, because she was already retired, and I think that we were one of the last groups or something like that.
You got to learn from
her? No, there were lots of recordings, but we had access by reaching our questions and something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I for some reason I felt such a connection that that I really feel like I studied from her. It was a very good course, even though most of it was recorded.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. And TPT, I love it a lot. But it helps only with some issues. Mm-hmm. And when I was a client, I went, first of all, I had a few years in phenomenological, let's put it like this, approach before I became a therapist myself. Mm. It's more like a process-oriented psychotherapy by Arnold Mindell, who has recently passed away, unfortunately. I was also lucky to have to be supervised by him. It's a very different supervision, which Ernie, how he preferred to be called, provided, but still I had a chance to study from him via supervision. Mm. And I'm a bit sad, of course.
yeah, I can tell. And that was very impactful for you, like his approach?
Yes. My first therapy as a client, I was depressed. It was 2014, and I was depressed, and I approached one of the therapists in Moscow, and she worked in this direction and this approach, and she helped me a lot. And it was not real depression. It was only some symptoms of depression. That's why after 1 month, I was already working and happy, quite happy at least. I got interested in my inner world, and I stayed in therapy with her in this approach. And it helped me a lot to understand my inner world, that not only my cognitive world exists, that there are some other levels inside me and outside of me that actually also must be considered at least when analyzing a situation or making a decision. And then I decided it was finished, and I decided why don't I try CBT because it's so cool, and it was CBT and schema therapy, which I actually really like schema therapy. Maybe it was wrong choice of therapist, I don't know. But I had 33 hours of this approach, and it was not enough for me, this psychodynamic part. I really needed to discuss my feelings more and our relationships with my therapist. And she did not have proper knowledge and practice in it. So she couldn't. It was kind of, she couldn't cope with my emotions. And that's why I'm saying that. It's not like it did not work for me. Maybe it's a wrong sentence. It's kind of, it was not enough for me. So psychodynamic approaches, like psychoanalysis, TFP, are much more to my heart.
I was recently reading about psychoanalysis being considered like soul work, like psyche and the soul, and how it started off as more like soul work. And I love the emphasis. It's not just on, you know, cognitions, emotions, behaviors. It's like, tell me your fantasies, tell me your dreams, tell me what you think about that you've never told anybody else. Like, tell me you know, I want to understand you. I love that.
Because you are the world, and it's so interesting to get acquainted to your world, to this whole universe.
And so when you decided to go into therapy yourself, like become a therapist, what is the education like? What's the road to becoming a therapist? And yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. In Russia, there are two ways. The first way is from the governmental institution, governmental university, and it's called specialitet or speciality. It lasts for 6 years, and you cannot do it distantly. You have to come to lectures and seminars and et cetera, et cetera. So it's like a doctor. Right. I mean, not like the level, but like to become a, it's like a, doctors, they also, medical professions, they also study for 6-7 years and then internship. And then there is another way, which is the fast route. When you have a higher education, for instance, I used to be a teacher of English, like TESOL studies. English and Chinese, but I forgot Chinese. practice. And when you have a higher education, you can go to the private institution, and in less than a year, you can get a special skills and knowledge in being a counselor. So to work with people short terms and on some requests. And then you have to study for some approach and go deeper and deeper and deeper. So my way is the second way. They say that soon it won't be possible in Russia to study the fast track. Only specialty, only 6 years. Yes. Only people with, like doctors, with 6 years of studying would be allowed to work as therapists. There is the same difference as in the USA between a therapist and psychologist. So if you're a psychologist, it's more like academic, so you're teaching or doing some research. And if you're a therapist or a counselor, we also call it like this, literally in Russia, from Russian language, it's called psychologist consultant, psycholog consultant. But it's, as you guys say, therapist or counselor. These are people who are allowed officially to work with people. Government obliges us to have minimum of 50 hours of personal therapy and minimum, I think, 100 hours of supervision.
Okay.
So this is like obligatory in order to work with people, which is very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to... after my bachelor's, I went to graduate school to become a clinical psychologist, and it's like 5 or 6 years altogether. And they don't require, most universities here do not require you to have your own personal therapy. They will recommend it. They will say, it's a good thing, you should do it, but they don't require it. Yeah.
In Russia, it is required. Unfortunately, there are no, punishment for not having it. So people still can break these rules. But more or less, there are people who come to this profession are quite conscious. So they try to follow these rules, these regulations.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I think that it should be required. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Here,
officially it is required, but it should be also, you know,
enforced.
They will do it. I hear some gossips from my senior colleagues those people from the PPL that I'm talking about, vice presidents of the PPL, they are officially invited to the governmental meetings to discuss the law on psychotherapy in Russia and how it should be organized and the education on psychotherapy and et cetera, et cetera. So the government actually listens to real practitioners, to real people. And after that, they are... making some amends. So it's in the process, as far as I can hear from my senior colleagues from the PPL.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I also think that is cool. it's better than to listen to the governmental people who have no idea about the real world.
Exactly. So you did the fast track, which you said is about a year.
Yeah.
And then after that year, you get basically licensed and you can kind of, then it's all more like self-study, or you can go through other programs like to learn more about supervision or psychoanalysis or something like that.
To become accredited or certified, for instance, from our organization, then you are obliged to provide a special certificate. Actually, I can show you to them. I did not think about it before, but it's another file. I will show you. So we are obliged to provide these international certificates. They are in two languages. I will show you. For instance, like that. You see, they are
in two
languages. Yes, and they are approved for personal therapy. Here it's 279 hours. I haven't updated it yet, but it's okay. I'm now in the analysis, so I will do it in a few years maybe. It's more than enough. And these certificates are internationally accepted. And so in order to be accredited or certified, you must provide this. for personal therapy and for supervision. And for instance, this is one of the smallest thing for supervision, only for 3 hours, but it's just the fastest I could find. It's also in 2 languages, and they are widely accepted.
Okay.
You see here is the title of the EAP. Sorry that I'm showing with my finger. European Association of Psychotherapists, the largest professional organization in Europe. And this is how it works. So this is why it's worldwidely accepted. So in order to be accredited or certified, you have to provide these papers and also papers on your education, also official, like certificates for everything that you've done. They are counting all hours altogether. And after that, you can be firstly accredited and then certified. So this is how it works.
Yeah, okay. And how long does that process take? Is it kind of up to you and how quickly you get hours?
Well, I was lucky because I had a therapy before I became a therapist. So that's what I had. I just collected all the hours and that's all. Supervision, of course, it will take some time. 100 hours of supervision, I think, will take around 1 year of every week supervision. I think, yeah. And then total educational hours, it depends. Of course, it will take at least 1 year.
Do you have your own private practice where you see people and then you get supervision?
Yes, I have only private practice. I don't work in some organization. I have only private practice, and I work on Wednesdays. I work offline with my clients in Moscow, and I also work online with my clients from different countries, from 15 countries. Sometimes I work in English as well. For instance, I used to work with couples. They were international couples. Mainly women were Russian speaking and men were foreigners. From Israel or from the USA, by the way. And this is how we work. But I stopped working with couples last summer, and now I'm focused only on working with business and delivering supervision for my colleagues.
Okay. Why did you decide to stop working with couples?
It's not very interesting for me to discuss their relationships, honestly. It's impossible. Sorry.
No, thanks for being honest.
It's just not interesting for me. And I remember I've got some training from the USA as well. And from Harvard as well, and they told us the first thing that you have to say to your couple is no fights, and if you start fighting, I have a right to stand up from my seat and do this gesture, this gesture, and in the worst case scenario, I will still sit between you.
Oh wow.
And I was like, what? Will people do that? And yes, they did. I mean, every time. I mean, I did not have lots of couples work, but those couples that came to me were enough for me. Every time I had to do the break gesture. Maybe I'm a very bad couple therapist. I don't know.
But no, it's a whole different ball game, a whole different type of work.
Yes, for me, it's much easier to work with business issues or personal issues. And even if business partners come, also couples therapy, but it's a completely different story. I never did a breakup test with them.
That's funny. I'm going to have to use that. Next time I see a couple, I'm going to have to let them know I can use
maybe it was wrong. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm really bad couples therapist. That's why.
I was curious, do you...
I tried my best. Yeah.
I'm sure you did a fantastic job.
Daniel.
I know maybe in your line of work, you deal more with businesses and supervision, like business and supervision. So you might not see this as much, but do you know the general... is there much religion and spirituality issues that get brought into therapy?
It's a very good question, Daniel. Thank you for this. I was when I was preparing today, this was one of your questions, and it is, and I'll tell you the difference. It's like a soul work. First of all, we have to know that there are almost 150 million people in Russia with more than 70 religious confessions. So it's lots of different religions. And of course, here in Russia, all the main religions are represented. And I know that there are therapists who are therapists, and they have a deep knowledge of their religion, like Islam therapists or Jewish-oriented therapists. And I know that they are doing fantastic job. In Judaism, all right, there are rabbis who are actually doing some conflict job, and they are doing quite good job, as far as I know. But still, there are Jewish-oriented psychologists as well, therapists as well. And I know that, for instance, Islam therapists or Islam-oriented therapists, they are mainly female colleagues, and they are widespread in the Northern Caucasus. And they are doing fantastic job for Islamic women. This region in Russia is very different from other regions because of the religion, of course, because the religion demands absolutely different things from people. Yeah. And women are in a very different position in the modern world. And they have to somehow cope with that. And still they have social medias where they see a completely different life. So I know that our colleagues, Islam-oriented therapists, they are really doing a fantastic job. Some people are very religious, and they are intentionally looking for a therapist who is oriented in some religion. But also, what is more important, even if religious issues are not arised in therapy, even if we are talking about business, spiritual issues are always. And Russian people are very soul-oriented, how people describe them usually. Very irrational. That's why irrational, because soul-oriented. The soul is culturally is the main for us. And it doesn't have any connection with religion. And in this sense, yes, lots of spiritual issues or spiritual questions are raised in therapy. And I think that nowadays, at least in Russia, therapy is your rabbi, your father. Let's put it like this. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I will switch off the emails. And also, I know from my superior colleagues that there are some Orthodox fathers who actually come to therapy and supervision. But I mean, it's not officially, of course, but so it's kind of gossip, but you can trust this gossip. So they had
neat.
Yeah, that's actually cool that people from religion also come to supervision to find out something about their relationships and
that's really neat. At my university, it's I went to kind of like a Christian university, so they focused a lot on religion and spirituality, and we learned a little bit about if we were doing therapy with someone who is Muslim or someone who is Hindu or someone who is Christian. But there's a lot of research and people trying to psychologists and therapists trying to collaborate with like priests, clergy, pastors, rabbi, and so psychologists need to learn more about religion, and if they have a Christian patient or a Muslim patient, how can we help them? And then they're encouraging pastors to also learn a little bit about psychology, especially in America. I think in America, there's a kind of a unique, in some ways, Christianity where it's more literal, and like for instance with evolution, a lot of Christians in America don't believe in evolution, or they think that that's against the Bible or something like that, and so they try to encourage more psychology and scientific discourse. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I thought that there are still people who do not believe that the earth is round, for instance,
there's
in the evolution. Yeah. I think that I'm not sure how these directions are widespread in Russia. Honestly, I have no idea. I've heard about them, but I have no idea how many of them are. And another reason why I like psychoanalysis or deeper approaches is that all those main books like the Bible or Torah, they are describing the myths that are very, very common to our psyche, like Cain and Abel, envy and this is like being envy, that's all. And this is fantastic. And people, and it's very, these myths are very, very common to our psyche. And it's very easy to talk to a person based on these myths and not being necessarily connected to the religion.
And that's anyway, common over, that's common in maybe like in Moscow and Russia. It's common to bring up myths from the Bible or Torah to talk about in therapy.
Yes, especially if for instance we are talking about dreams or talking about some associations. Of course, we can if it appears to be connected somehow or associated. Of course, we can explain something on this. And people understand it very quickly. It's like we're using it as myths or stories. Or we can use also Greek mythology. This is very good. It reminds me of one lecture that I have recently heard. This was from Rabbi, acting Rabbi. He is acting Rabbi Goldstein. He has also his YouTube channel in Russian language. He studied from the University by Adler in Chicago and also in Canada and, you know, in many places. And he talks about religion and psychotherapy because he's also psychoanalytic, like working, acting psychoanalytic. And I was fascinated when I saw this lecture, and I forgot about everything, did something with my timetable, and just drove to listen to him. So he talked about Freud and how psychoanalysis is actually connected to Kabbalah. Kabbalah is the way of reading Torah. And actually it makes sense because one of his arguments was that because Freud was born and raised in very religious environment before his parents moved to Vienna, they were actually, they lived among Hasids. This is one of the most religious Jewish people, one of the direction in Judaism. So, of course, he kind of, and Kabbalah is the way how Jewish people read Torah. And for instance, how they read it? The same ways as psychoanalysis has. So, dreams. Or asking, why is this omitted? Why is this written like this? Why is this dot omitted?
Oh,
and this is extra dot when this letter doesn't need this dot. So he claims, and I really believed him, that, for instance, Freud was born and raised in these ideas of these kinds of thinking. So when he started, Dr. Goldstein, actually, he claims that his first issues, Freud's first issues of dreams, dream work, as sources, he listed those Kabbalistic books. But after that, he removed them. And he tried to do everything so that nobody connects this to his theory to religion. But this actually makes sense. So when we are born and raised in some kind of culture, of course, we it's kind of in our mother's milk, the way how this culture thinks. And if, for instance, this culture thinks in analytical way, so I will apply this way of thinking to my theory. this makes sense. So I think that religion is much more connected to therapy than we usually think about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never heard that. I've heard, I found this book by, his name is Sanford Drob. He is a forensic psychologist. He's Jewish and he lives in New York, and he wrote about Carl Jung and the Kabbalah, and he talked about how Jungian psychology comes from the Kabbalah. And I interviewed him as well. I don't think the Russian subtitles are very good,
I saw this video. I haven't watched it yet, but I've not watched it, and to watch it. I was very surprised.
Yeah, very interesting. And I know in Jungian psychoanalysis, they say psychoanalysis and spirituality are one and the same thing. Like, you can't do psychoanalysis without spirituality. It's all connected. So very interesting.
Yeah, yes. When the Soviet Union stopped functioning, and the gates were open. Our colleagues in Russia and post-Soviet countries got access to many schools. And some of the schools were actually adopted to, let's put it like this, post-Soviet or Russian-speaking mentality. Transactional analysis got its Eastern branch of transactional analysis. And this is adopted version for our countries. And one of the ideas that is fundamental when adopting an approach is this spirituality, because spiritual issue is very important for our people. The questions, the issues of soul.
yeah. Fundamental. Mm-hmm. And let's say in your city in Moscow, how common would you say it is for, do people feel like maybe they're culturally religious or like a cultural Christian or something like that, but they don't really believe in God anymore? Maybe they are agnostic, I don't know. Or do they tend to be more atheistic, but spiritual? Do you know where people kind of lean?
Unfortunately, I do not have statistics. So yeah. I would rely only on my very subjective opinion, if it's all right for you, Daniel.
That's okay with me.
All right. I was very surprised how many people are quite religious. And still they are... I was surprised only a few weeks ago when I talked to my friend, and she showed me how many people come to Saturday service, Saturday evening service. I was really surprised. I never thought that there would be so many people. So I would say that my very subjective opinion is that there are much more religious people than I used to think about.
Okay.
Atheists and agnostics still are. Maybe not so widespread. But all those all the people are not... how to say, they are not aggressively showing their faith. If they asked, they would reply. They are not, they do not insist, they do not demand from other people. They basically kind of don't care what another person thinks of their faith or in what he or she believes in. So they are keeping their faith towards themselves. That's why I was surprised. Because it's not widespread in the
conversation.
In the conversations. It's not like that. I mean, of course, there is a radio, religious radios or religious channels. I think one religious channel, but still, I don't have full statistics. But it's all right. Everyone should have, right? Because it's a respect. But it's not aggressively showing off or something like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just curious. Sorry to catch you off guard.
No, it's okay. It's very interesting to answer questions.
Yeah. Another catch you off guard moment. You said you recently attended a convention. I can't think of the word right now, but on envy. Is that what you did?
Oh yeah, seminar on envy. Yeah.
A seminar on envy. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about it? What you learned? What you thought?
Oh. All right. This seminar is fantastic. It's based on works of psychoanalytical works by Melanie Klein, especially, and you know, because she has this envy and gratitude works. So my mentor and my supervisor Inga Rumantseva, she is the author of this seminar, and she has studied deeper approaches for many, many years. I don't even know how many. She's a beautiful woman. You will never tell that. She has such a huge experience. And you will see her when you come to our convention this autumn. She will be leading the section on supervision with your report. I hope that you will come, right?
Yes, I'll be there.
So you will see her. And she is the author of this seminar. And she, I think that she has been studying these issues of envy and gratitude and jealousy for 18, I think, years. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And she found some supervisional ways to work on these huge issues without analysis. This is why I like supervision. She also started from Ernie Arnold Mindel. And she also studied from Russian, quite famous Professor Ananyev. And she was called as shaman.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yes, like a wizard. Because he did such a such a deep work that it looked as magic. It looked as magical.
That's what I want to do.
But it was not. There was no magic. He just knew the psyche of a person so well, and how to, you know, how to do everything so well that it looked magic. So these seminars, I'm going the second year. This year was the second part, and next summer will be the third part.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic transformational training. And I've got some personal insights and professional insights. For instance, because you actually asked about my insights, right? First of all, there is nothing we can do about envy. So we can never finish with this issue, but we can learn how to work with our personal envy in such a way that it doesn't break our relationships and it doesn't break ourselves. And we can turn it into gratitude. This is a fantastic way.
Keep going. Tell me more about that.
All right. Inga said that the issue of being jealous actually can be worked on. And we can stop being jealous and feel jealousy at all. So this issue we can work on. Another, the third issue, greedy, will be the topic of the next year.
Okay.
So, actually, I have some written insights from this.
You said that you can turn envy into gratitude.
Yes.
And I remember Dr. Leslie Greenberg emotion focused therapy. He talked, he wrote a, his, I think his most recent book was, I forget the title, but the subtitle is Replacing Emotion with Emotion. And he talks about taking an emotion like envy, and then you can't just, yeah, you can't really do away with an emotion, but you can change it with another emotion. You can't just, you have to replace it with something. So yeah, replace one emotion like envy with the emotion of gratitude. That stood out to me.
Yes, Marcia Linehan also teaches us how to replace one emotion with another if it's fact-based. So for instance, there is also a way how to turn envy into another emotion. And it also works very well. But it's like more, you know, situational. And envy is most of envy is not emotion, just a shortcoming emotion or a feeling. It's more like a subconscious impulse. And this impulse we can never get rid of. This impulse is what Melanie Klein teaches us about. She says that an infant is always always feels envy as this impulse, and it's destructive impulse. And the infant feels this impulse to one of the mother's breasts. So one breast becomes good and one breast becomes bad. And the infant always feels this envy, impulse of envy, enviness, because the good breast has everything the infant needs. Never-ending milk. And I as an infant, don't have it. So I envy my mom that I have it. It's such an interesting topic because envy also, as an impulse, a subconscious impulse, exists in mother as well, especially in mothers of female infants, of girls. This is very, very interesting. And that's why, because this is not just an emotion. Most of the time we don't even consciously feel that we envy someone or something.
Why did you say that? What is it about mothers of female infants that maybe especially feel envy?
Because there is the whole life in front of this small girl. And she has already had her opportunities used and maybe not in the best way. Sometimes because the mother sees how, maybe the mother did not have this experience of fatherly love towards her. And when she actually, when she's a good woman and she finds a good father to her baby girl, and this father actually loves their baby girl, she envies her. Because she did not have it. She lacked it. Also so different. Different ways. Yeah.
Real quick. I've never read any of Melanie Klein's work, so I know very little about, I know like terms like the schizoid and the there's like a gradient, I forget, there's like three stages. I need to do more reading of Melanie Klein, so this is interesting to me.
Me too, it's so interesting. For instance, your child psychoanalysis is fantastic, but I still haven't finished this book because it's so deep for me. I can read by the way, I'm reading it in English.
Wow.
Some of the books I intentionally read in English so that I could understand it better. Because if they are written in English. So I'm reading like a small sentence and then I can I can leave a few days just thinking over this sentence. This is so deep for me, fantastic works.
Yeah,
Yes.
yeah. Wow, that's impressive. I wish that I could read and understand German because I'm currently reading through like all of Freud's works. I just, yeah, and but I'm reading it in English, and I know that there's a lot of translation issues, so I wish I could do that. Maybe one day I'll teach myself. But you said you found the notes?
Yes, especially by the way, with the translation, Dr. Gladstein, no, sorry, Goldstein, Gladstein, sorry, I forgot his name. I'm so sorry, doctor. I hope that he will forgive me. Anyway, he says that yes, one of the main translation issues from German to English was in the way how the psyche is structured. So, he explained us that I have my notes here, I think. Yes. He explained das S and it or оно in Russian. This is a bit different. And then in English, in German, it's he explained as das über ich, like sverch ja, super ego, sorry,
Above I.
above,
Yeah,
yeah.
okay.
Super
Yeah.
ego, right? It's so easy. It's also a kind of mistake in translation.
Yeah, I've heard that in German, Freud used words like I, ego was I.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
And it's very personal. You resonate with it. It's one of the first words you learn. And then das über ich was above I, and then yeah, das ich was id, what
Yes.
it, yeah, the
Yes.
it. And when they translated that into French, it's also like the very personal, but when it's in English, here's some Latin, and it's very detached and just a very different feeling to it.
Exactly. Yes, this is the correct way. Das ich, I, not ego. No, so this is where we go. This is the difference. Yeah, I studied a bit German in school, and I also like this language a lot, and I hope that someday I will keep learning it. I'm on the A1 level. Anyway, about envy, I found my some insights, some notes, five insights. I'll try to translate them in Russian. That I don't have is that I envy. So this is the first insight. The second insight is that envy doesn't have anything in common with my personal qualities. This is unconscious impulse. Everyone has this impulse. Am I ready to agree with this? The third one, envy does not fulfill my wishes. If I envy someone or something, like, oh, I want it as well. I want to do the same. And if I think that I will go and just do it, no, it will not be possible. Because wishes that are coming from envy will be destroyed subconsciously.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so something that really interesting. And then the one that I already mentioned, envy impulses, we never work on them. I mean, we work on them, but we never finish working with them. And jealousy, yes, we can be free of it. Mm. Work on it. And the final one is to change something means undergo something.
To change something means to undergo something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, which usually involves discomfort, which people hate. Yeah.
Which is about psychodynamic approaches. You have to ask for something, not just understand.
Yes. Yeah. Anna, where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
Mm. Great question, Daniel. Thank you. I hope that I have enough resources and health and everything other to make this happen. I will become a master's in psychoanalysis.
Mm.
I will, I will be working in 2 languages and somehow be a bridge in between languages and cultures and nations, so that we have less and less conflicts or more and more cultural ways of solving conflicts.
Hmm.
Or psychological ways. I hope so. And I hope that I will be able to apply my psychological and supervisional knowledge to solving conflicts in companies, or who knows, maybe in 10 years, yeah, between nations. This is how Ernie Arnold Mandel also developed his the world work to do this, to solve racial and some other conflicts. So I hope that I will make my small input in this field so that hopefully the world would become a bit nicer and more peaceful place. Or if not, at least in some on some organizational levels, do the same.
Mm. Yeah.
Working with people and personally get married, have children, and build a family.
Mm. Yeah. No, those are all very worthwhile. And I think you said you had a mentor who encouraged you to do supervision, and you thought, I can't do this. What was that mentor's name?
The same, Ingar Mantua. Ingar.
Yeah, I think I understand why she has so much faith in you, and I think that that's
really?
yeah. No, I think that's very good, and
so touching. Thank you.
I look forward to staying in contact with you and seeing all of the things that you're going to be doing and the ways you're going to impact the field. And I love the piece. I love the heart behind you wanting to be a bridge. I think that that's very needed, and especially from somebody like you.
It's very touching. I'm about to cry. Thank you.
Yeah.
From the very deep of my heart. Thank you. Thank
Last you. Question.
Okay.
Your YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
What got you decided to start a YouTube channel? What is it on? And I will link a description in this video. But yeah, can you tell us a little bit about your YouTube channel and how that process has gone?
Oh, thank you. I have a connection to 2 YouTube channels, my personal one and the Committee on Supervision. My personal one I have just started. There is only one video. And I discuss there how Roy Kroc, the founder of the McDonald's, why he succeeded only after his 50s. I tried to do a supervision on this answering this question.
And oh, cool.
Our committee's channel is quite interesting, I think. So we are doing movie supervisions. So we watch a movie and we make a supervision on the heroes and the movie, and it's quite interesting. And we are talking about Molly Bloom, which is based on real story. We even bought a book from her. First we watched the movie, and then we were so fascinated by her story. We didn't understand it fully, so we bought her book in Russian. And we read it and supervised it. So we're really focused on this kind of
book. Yeah, wow, cool. Is that who you told me about in the email?
Yes.
Fascinating.
And also, yeah, I will show you. It's here is your book in Russian. These are my notes.
Wow. Wow.
Trying to supervise that movie and this book, this lady. Another another interesting, maybe hopefully interesting part of our YouTube channel is we are talking on Bjorn's supervision. So I found transcriptions of Wilfred Bjorn's supervision, which he made, which he delivered in Brazil, in Argentina, etc. And I'm translating them to a few colleagues only. We're not distributing it, of course, so that they could understand what's what was there. And then we discuss it in the videos, the way he led his supervisions, the way how he followed them. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And also we have some free lessons from our teachers on supervision, and reports from our conventions, from conferences, from our very respected teachers of supervision, who some of them do their own research work, and it's very interesting to hear from them their results. So this is our YouTube channel, and we're very welcome to. I was thinking about doing this in August. Part of my small contribution being a bridge is to, and Inga supports this idea, to reload all the videos with English auto subtitles, maybe to correct some of them, and also all the titles in English, because they're very. Some of the videos are quite interesting about movies, about Wilfred Bjorn, and maybe we could be, it could be interesting. And this year we're starting having more and more foreign professors on our conferences, and this will be our input in the professional community. The more the world tries to separate us, the more we would like to be connected.
Yeah, no, good. No, congratulations on that. And I think, I think that's all very interesting. I love the idea that you guys discuss and like analyze movies and talk about it from a supervision lens. And yeah, that's super cool. I'm going to check more of them out, and I'll link it in the description, like I said, so people can find it.
Thank you, Daniel. Can I answer one of your questions that were on your list?
Oh, yeah, please. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Because you were asking in your city, what does the general population think of therapy? Are they open to it?
Yes.
Maybe you could just, you know, put it somewhere in the video or something. When I was getting ready today, I found that it's... it's much more popular than I'm thinking, because I don't think about these questions every day. I just do my job. Yeah. And when answering your questions, I started analyzing. And actually, it's much more widespread than I would even think a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yes, psychology on its own, psychology on the whole. There is a difference between large cities like Moscow, St. Petersburg, and small towns and villages. So people in small towns and villages, it's quite common to have this misconception. Let's put it like post-Soviet misconception that when you need, when you go to a psychologist or to a therapist, you're crazy. It's connected. Uh-huh. It's connected. This misconception still exists because in the Soviet times, psychology was mainly developed in medical context, in psychiatrical context, connected to neurophysiology and neurosciences. And also reflexes and physiology itself. So the people, they used to think that therapists are only good for those who are crazy. And only crazy people need them. So this misconception still lives in people's minds, but mostly in small towns and villages. In large cities, and there are lots of them in Russia. It's not like that. People more and more use psychology in its different ways. For instance, I have a supervisee who works in one of the organizations who provides therapy as a necessary, like usual foundational insurance. So for instance, if a person works somewhere, if he or she is employed, then he or she has this, it's called DMS, this kind of insurance. And this person can use therapy and not pay, and not pay for this.
Oh, great.
Another thing is that we have lots of free toll numbers and free volunteers and special psychological services, which work under supervision. For instance, I'm, as a Moscow citizen, have access to one special line. It's totally free. It's professional psychological help. I can use it once a day for 30 minutes for free.
Wow.
And you know, Daniel, once I really used it because first of all, I decided to try it. And secondly, I really needed some help because I was in between my therapies and I really needed some help. So I called
them. Was it good?
It was fantastic.
Really?
I was so impressed.
I
was so impressed, genuinely impressed. The girl did fantastic job.
Wow.
Since then, I always always tell on my social, my personal social media, money, if money is an issue, forget about it. You have this phone number, call it. They're fantastic. And so I can use this fantastic help for, totally for free for 30 minutes every day. And these kind of numbers, they exist for different populations, like students, separate number, Moscow citizens, separate number, another city, separate number, and so on and so forth. For families of combats, separate number. Really fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, more and more organizations use psychological help. They have a special position as occupational psychologist or the person psychologist in HR, and moreover, corporate psychologist. So, if I work in some bank, for instance, there is a I have my own office. If I'm as a psychologist, as a therapist, work there, and every employee can come and talk to me about their issue. It doesn't matter. Work, personal, anything.
Wow.
And there are lots of these positions nowadays in organizations. So more and more people are using this. People use social psychology. People use organizational psychology, psychoanalytic coaching, different types of psychology, not only therapy in Russia. And post-Soviet countries, at least these countries like Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Armenia, Belarus, Ukraine, they also use so many psychology in so many ways, and therapy as well. It's like the demand is higher than the offer.
Oh, wow.
The digits.
And it sounds like the offer is very high. Like the amount of, like, having a therapist or psychologist within an organization or a bank or something, like, that's awesome. That's unheard of here.
And, you know, successful people, how they call themselves, successful people or people with money, they officially and very open say on their social medias that every rich person has to have their own therapist. Firstly, work on your mindset and then work on your business skills. This is like the usual, informational focus on their social medias or something like this. It's interesting. And an entrepreneur saying like this on their social media, and it's less and less scary for people. And more and more people say but in large cities again.
Oh, yeah.
But there are lots of that still.
Yeah. In America, it is it's still very medicalized. And I remember, so reading about like psychoanalysis coming to America, they tried to make it a rule that if you were going to practice psychoanalysis, you had to be a medical doctor. And then Freud wrote a piece on that called The Question of Lay Analysis. And he was saying, you don't need to be a medical doctor. But it's still very much like, you know, the DSM, you have things like depression, anxiety, all that. It's all labeled like a mental disorder or a mental illness. And a lot of times it's treated with medications. So it's still very much associated with medicine, and there's something wrong with you if you feel this way. And so I like the idea of pushing toward a different mindset in America where you can go see a therapist, you can go see an analyst, you can go see a psychologist, and it doesn't mean that you have a medical disorder. It doesn't mean that you have a mental illness. It just means that you're a human and that you have struggles and you're looking for someone to help you through those times and to figure out how to live your life in a way that makes that less likely, you know, like, so I think it's still very prevalent here in America, even in cities, but the younger generation, I think maybe people in their 20s at the moment, they're a lot more, they're a lot more open to the idea of having a therapist and talking about having a therapist. And just because you have a therapist, it doesn't mean that you're crazy or that there's something wrong with you. They're a lot more open to that idea. So that's encouraging. Yeah.
Yes, that's encouraging. And there is nothing wrong with some medical help, because sometimes we really need to go to ask the person to go to psychiatrist and to use some medications. And in Russia, people are still scared of going to psychiatrists because in the Soviet times, it was a completely different story, and people could be put in a clinic without their agreement. Nowadays, it's completely different story, and we have to do lots of informational work on these issues in Russia as well, because so that people do not be frightened of going to psychiatrist, because sometimes it's such a relief when a person just knows that, oh, it's just a disease that can be treated by these medications. Yeah. It's not like the end of the world. And we have lots of issues as well in Russia, of course, and they are more like from the professional point of view, not maybe from the client's point of view.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like sometimes it could be so much easier if everyone is obliged to go to supervision. It would be so much better. Or to personal therapy. But it's from our point of view, right? Not from the client's point of view. Sometimes they're getting help from a person who has never been in therapy, only because this person is very, very motivated in being a provider of help.
Thank you for clarifying that. I didn't mean to make it sound in any way bad that someone might need to go see a psychiatrist and get medication or help for a medical issue. I think that there's a fine balance. I think a lot of times it is a medical issue that you need to get help for. And then other times it's a human struggle. It's like a soul problem and they feel like they cannot go because for some people, it's a relief to hear that they have a disease that it can be treated. For other people, they don't want to go hear that they have a disease. And so it keeps them from, it's a very complicated issue. Yeah.
It is. And if we remember James Grotstein, now is the period of borderline period of time. So more and more people are on this stage, on this level of organization. And of course, it affects everyone. And what I also noticed is, because I'm subscribed to some American colleagues some social medias, and I've noticed the same as in Russia, as in the USA, that people... Common people, not professionals. Common people, when they learn some title, they'll be using it. Oh, you are a narcissist. Oh, you are in this kind of relationships. Or you are in abusive relationships. Oh, you are abusing me. Oh my goodness! Sometimes they're hosts, not colleagues, but usual people when they're.
Yeah.
Overusing these terms. They don't even know what this means, but they read something, or they went to one or two hours of counseling, and for some reason they understood. People are overusing it, and also this kind of, because of this labeling, people could feel some kind of restriction in going to a professional. Because, what will my friends think of me? How will I tell my family if this is true? And they start to study checklists. Oh, okay, I'm a narcissistic. I'm in this kind of relationship. I'm an abuser. Oh, my goodness, no. Please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be reasonable.
Okay, Anna, I think we'll have to end here. I want to say that I really appreciate you joining me. I'm glad that we were finally able to make this conversation happen. It's been a wonderful conversation. I've learned a lot, so thank you very much for that.
Daniel, thank you so much for having me here, and for it's such an honor for me to talk to you about Russia and psychotherapy and different approaches and learn more about you. And I enjoyed it a lot and learned a lot from you, and I hope to see you on our international conference is...